Hey, Farmer. How's it going today?
Oh, good, Joey. How are you?
Doing all right, man. I'm excited. It's finally here, man. It's one of the greatest days of the year. It's race day. It's the Daytona 500, and, you know, I for one, am definitely super excited. There's only a few days in the year that I actually put a circle on my calendar, mostly because I forget, but I'm really stoked about today. I mean, Daytona 500, 57th annual edition of it, and I tell you what, it's been a nutty weekend, but man, we get to go racing today.
Yeah, I agree with you there that it has been one of the most controversial and nutty nutty speed weeks in recent memory.
Yeah, I think I guess we'll. We'll kick off the show, and first off, for all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Daytona 500 preview show, and we're going to try to take you as close to the green flag as possible, and a lot of storylines going into today, and I guess first and foremost, we'll start it off with what was the craziness that was the Xfinity race yesterday, in which Kyle Busch, driver for the number 18 M&M's Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing, actually ended up nailing the wall. He's out for today. He's laid up in a hospital. Luckily, the crash was incredibly vicious, and you know, luckily he came out of there. Although the injuries suck, it looked a lot like it could have been a lot worse. So he ended up hitting a part of the wall where the safer barrier was not, and I believe it was a compound fracture to his right leg, and he also broke his left foot. And to go ahead and where am I going with this? I'm starting to lose my train of thought here. They've got Matt Crafton, the super sub, so to speak, for today. He's going to make his Sprint Cup debut. No practice time in this car. Hasn't had any runs whatsoever. They had to extend the gas pedal, extend the brake pedal, put some padding in the seat because him and Kyle are a little different in size. And but yeah, the two-time defending Truck Series champion is going to get his dream realized under the unfortunate circumstances that have happened. But he gets an opportunity to race in the Daytona 500.
Yeah, I think Crafton's one of those guys. You know, he's raced in the Truck Series for a really long time, and he's finally, he finally got his first two championships the last couple of years, and he's starting to kind of dip his toes in with the Nationwide Series, and now all of a sudden, you know, he gets thrown right on NASCAR's biggest stage to make his debut in unfortunate circumstances. I mean, restrictor plate racing, it's different in all three series, restrictor plate racing is different. But overall, you know, I mean, a race to make your debut, I'd say a play race kind of, it's got its pros and cons. I mean, as we talked about before, restrictor plate racing can be a total lottery. But on the other hand, you know, still restrictor plate racing takes a lot of patience and a lot of skill. And it takes a unique art to master a plate race, I think. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. I mean, he's never we said it before, you know, he's never run a truck. He's never run a cup race at a plate track. So, but time will tell, and we'll see how he does. I think picking up Crafton would, getting somebody like him rather than, you know, I mean, I guess seeing someone like an Alex Bowman putting them in a good car like that, it would have been interesting to see them. But I mean, Crafton wasn't a bad choice.
Yeah, I think a lot of rumors were going around that it would be Erik Jones. who raced for Kyle Busch at the truck series level for Kyle Busch Motorsports and is now at Joe Gibbs. Well, he kind of has been since then, but is with the Joe Gibbs Xfinity team. You know, NASCAR, I believe the rumor going around is that they overruled it because of his lack of experience. But I tell you, it's interesting because as much as people, I mean, you can't, there is nothing like practice time. There's nothing like track time. And this is going to be a very steep hill for Crafton, but I will say this. You got guys like Ryan Blaney out there who also was familiar with the truck series, who's done some Xfinity racing as well. And this is only going to be his third career start in that number 21 for the Wood Brothers Racing. And, you know, it definitely can be done. And you know, Blaney kept his nose clean in the dual race, more or less stayed on the bottom, very occasionally got off that yellow line. I think the first 50 laps, maybe 80 laps, we'll probably see much of the same. Crafton's going to look to probably just try to hang tight and get with the crew, get with the pack, and get on the inside part of the track, hang by the yellow line, keep it out of trouble, and then feel it out. I mean, because this is new to him, the air. Ryan Blaney talked about how the air is so different because of the aerodynamics from the car and how they buff off of each other compared to that of the truck series, the Xfinity. They do punch a hole in the air similar to how the trucks do. So that is one advantage I think that Crafton has to his credit. You know, also, the other news that happened yesterday, and granted, it happened Friday, but it became official as of last night around 10 o'clock. Kurt Busch, the other Busch brother, the elder of the two, 2004 Sprint Cup champion, is not going to be racing in this Daytona 500 either due to the indefinite suspension of NASCAR. He went to try to appeal the process yesterday. He tried it, give or take, around noon yesterday, and then tried it again around 7. He met with a three-board panel at noon. He ended up meeting with the actual finals appeals officer, Brian Moss, last night at NASCAR headquarters across the street from Daytona International Raceway, Speedway. And they decided to not reinstate him. They ruled in favor of NASCAR. And as a result, and I think it would have happened anyway, Regan Smith is going to be replacing Kurt Busch in the number 41 Haas CNC Chevy for Stuart Haas Racing. So very interesting to see. I like the idea of putting Regan in there. He's familiar with the team. Honestly, I think that could bode well. If there much is to be made for how the season's going to go, and the Kurt Busch situation, I mean, we may touch on it a little bit here, but more of it's going to be talked about later in the week when we actually have more time to devote to it. But I really like the idea for Regan in this car.
Yeah, I mean, Regan's proven himself as a super sub before. I mean, he finished eighth. He finished eighth in driving Dale Jr.'s car at Kansas, and you know, and I mean, since he's gone back to the Nationwide Series, well, or the Xfinity Series. My apologies. Since he's gone back there full time, you know, he's proven he's making himself a household name there. And you know, I mean, I'm not sure if Chase Elliott was considered or not. But I mean, but then again, I think it would have been a little hard on Chase, a little bit, you know, physically and mentally. You know, him being if he would have been chosen to sub for Kurt rather than next week in Atlanta when he's scheduled to make his debut, just given the circumstances. You know, I don't know if Chase would have been ready for it, but yeah, I mean Regan understands for sugar plate racing quite well. I mean, he technically crossed the line first at Talladega in 2009, but was deemed to have gone below the yellow line. But yeah, I mean Regan seems to remember, he seems like a good choice.
You think, just quick yes or no on this one, because do you think NASCAR got it right on suspending Kurt Busch, even though that there was no official plea of guilt or innocence in the situation yet, that it was just because of a protective order?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. That's the thing that you know the details of the case have not really been made public, other than it's saying that Kurt more likely than not put his hands on Patricia Driscoll. But I think ever since the whole Ray Rice situation happened last year, I think that NASCAR is taking the domestic violence a little bit more seriously. I think it's a little, you know, it may have been a little too quick to judge, being that Kurt has not been officially charged with anything. A few years ago, Travis Qualpel, admitted to assaulting his wife. Correct me if I'm wrong. And NASCAR took no action on that. But I don't know. It's kind of conflicting that it happened off the track because if you think about it, NASCAR's been showing commercials, all this week on the 1979 Daytona 500 with Bobby and Donnie Allison and Cale Yarborough going at it in turn three, saying that the fight was a notable factor of that race, and yet they're suspending a driver for something that happened off the track. So it can be taken either way. I'm curious to see what all the details of the case between Kurt and Patricia to make any kind of final judgment.
I think given the confusion and everything, and in the aftermath of in the wake of the suspension, I think that even if he was reinstated, or if he goes out and say gets a court order to try to block the suspension to try to overrule, because there is a way that can happen, to my understanding. I don't know if there's a team, including Stuart Haas, who he's contracted with. I don't know if a team's really going to take that risk just until things become more clear. And which is, how often do you say that about a former champion of the series, that someone is not willing to grab him? I mean, that right there is an automatic, especially if you're a struggling team. I mean, we saw Furniture Row do it. We saw the 51 team do it there for a little while. And, we'll get into a lot of this on the show later in the week. But, the more pressing matter is the safer barriers after Kyle Busch's crash in the Xfinity race. Why there wasn't one on the inside wall. These cars, obviously clear 200 miles an hour in the draft. Pack racing, we've seen these cars flip. We've seen head-on collisions. We've seen a lot of vicious stuff because pack racing just breeds cautions and it breeds wreck. I was pretty pissed off last night. I'll be the first to tell you. After everything had happened, the Xfinity race, and I'm not the biggest Kyle Busch guy, I'll tell you that right now. He reminds me a lot of Darrell Waltrip. I love Darrell. And ironically now they both have sustained broken legs. But I think that the interesting thing to put in all this is the support of the NASCAR family, because nobody wants to see that. And I think it's so interesting, though, and so telling that the interview that we heard with Joey Chitwood afterwards, Daytona president, and a lot of guys were talking about how NASCAR informs the tracks, but NASCAR takes their stuff out of the was it Lincoln, Nebraska, out there. I don't know if it's a tech school or the college, what have you. They lean heavily on Nebraska out at Lincoln for all their stuff on the safer barrier and kind of ruling for the safety around the tracks. And if you can build Daytona Rising, which is supposed to be this $400 million, we're going to make these seats ridiculously high, we're going to make this thing the biggest jam-packed sporting stadium track, in this side of the world. If you can afford that, why in the hell don't you have the safer barriers at every inch of that track beforehand? And I know now Joey Chitwood has said, you know, we're not resting until every inch of this place is covered. They don't offer excuses. They take responsibility for what happened. And, you know, now put in place is a bunch of tire racks on the inside part of the wall. And granted, it is the inside part of the wall, and you wouldn't think that a car would veer whenever all the G's are taking you to the right. You wouldn't think that a car would be pushed to the left, but this was between the short chute. I mean, this is between the tri-oval and turn one, and when the wreck happened, throttle was down. I mean, you feel for Kyle Busch because, you know, there was a good 5 seconds of veering that path, not slowing down. I mean, he knew consciously, I'm about to hit the hell out of this wall. And, I mean, to know it's coming, I mean, that takes a lot of something. And, I'm a little disgusted at the fact that we didn't seem to learn our lesson with things that happened 15 years ago. 100%. I mean, obviously everything's a learning process, but it just makes sense. You know, what does money matter? You've got all this, tracks are willing to put in the safety things. NASCAR and these tracks have got to work together, because at the end of the day, these drivers are your product. These drivers are your assets, and you want to protect your assets, because without that, NASCAR is nothing.
Yep.
And so I am absolutely bewildered about it. And, I mean, at least they're finally doing something. It's a little frustrating that you didn't have the common sense to do it ahead of time, I guess, is the best way, because if there was a safer barrier there, Kyle Busch might be racing today.
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, as this is all too common in racing, is that we're a lot more reactive than proactive. I mean, if you think about it, in the 4 years, or in the 2 year span of 2000 to 2001, we had four drivers die of a vascular skull fracture. We had Kenny Irwin, we had Tony Rupper, we had Adam Petty, and Dale Earnhardt, and then it wasn't until Earnhardt that NASCAR started mandating a Hans device, where then CART, the IRL, and Formula One mandated the Hans device. So unfortunately, an accident's an accident. I mean, we never know where and when it's gonna happen. And I think there's a few different factors here. This wreck was eerily similar to the wreck that broke Danny Hamlin's back at Fontana, where he hit where there was no safer barriers, and you know. And I mean, the difference here with Daytona was they were going about 20 miles an hour quicker, and then plus the area where Kyle skidded off, there was a bunch of grass planted. Had it been, you know, they've paved over a lot of the backstretch grass for that reason, that the cars do not slow down on the grass before they hit the wall. So I think that's the next issue that needs to be addressed. But yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, protecting the driver's safety should be number one. And you know, thankfully, all ovals have a safer barrier to some degree. You know, I mean the only track that has safer barrier 100% around it is Iowa, which is only 7/8 of a mile, which kind of brings me to my next point about cost. That, you know, to put safer barriers around Daytona might be too costly, but the thing of it is, at the core of it, is that if there's a concrete wall, a car is going to find it and hit it somehow, some way. You know, we don't know when it'll happen. You know, I'm glad that Joey Chiblett and Steve O'Donnell came forth and said, "Hey, we made a mistake and we need to fix it." I mean, I'm glad they did it late last night rather than waiting until after speed weeks was over. So,
I'll argue one point on that you mentioned, and that was you know, you mentioned Iowa able to afford it. It's a little bit smaller of a track, and maybe the point is cost. I guarantee you 150%. that Daytona's got deeper pocketbooks than Iowa.
Oh yeah, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
But anyway, more ranting to come on that one, I'm sure. But the you know, we've got give or take we're about 30 minutes away from start time for the Great American Race, and you know, there's a lot of fun storylines coming into this, and it's, you know, there's a story that I had a chance to write and really enjoyed doing it, and there's a lot of common things that I've heard recently. And the first thing I've heard is, well, a Petty-owned car are the only ones that win on February 22nd. You know, Richard Petty won on the 22nd, as did Pete Hamilton, both way back in the day. So if you're thinking along those lines and you want to go to Vegas, I'd probably put your money on Almirola for the 500, the guy that won in July last year. But, you know, I found the common interest in two drivers, one a former champion and of the event, and then one who we just touched on a little bit earlier, Ryan Blaney, and that's Trevor Bayne and Ryan Blaney. You know, before Trevor Bayne had won the Daytona 500 in 2011, he only had one start to his credit in the Sprint Cup Series, and that was at Texas. And I think he finished somewhere around 17th or so. And
mm-hmm.
Ryan Blaney has and no championships to Trevor Bayne's credit prior to going in. He was a Roush development driver. That was kind of a situation that was put together with Roush and Wood Brothers for that number 21. And then you got Ryan Blaney, who's made two cup starts. He doesn't have any championships to his name. He almost had one last year in the Truck Series, battling with Matt Crafton. And then, but he gets the nod. And there is just something dynamic about what Ryan Blaney, his composure for a 21-year-old is just absolutely uncanny. And I just, you know, he said in the post-race conference for the duels, you know, we could have probably got up there and mixed it up, but the goal number one was to keep this car in one piece. And, you know, we kind of saved quite a bit, and we'll see what's going to happen on Sunday. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing there, but that's ultimately what he had to say about that. But, you know, I really like the idea that the Wood Brothers are going this direction. And, you know, Blaney can pull from Penske, as is the Wood Brothers in this case. And I'm not saying pick Blaney, but I tell you what, I wouldn't put it past him to have a solid run. And if he wins this thing, that could really change the complexion about how Roger Penske wants to run with this kid, because a win all but guarantees you a chase berth.
Yeah, I think you knocked it out of the park there with Blaney. You know, I think Trevor Bayne is talented, but I think I would pick Brian Blaney in any day over Trevor. You know, just kind of rehashing what you said. You know, his composure, you know, heading into the race. You know, he's got this composure like a veteran. You know, he's not going to go out there and make any stupid mistakes or you know if it comes down to the last lap, you know, he might take a chance for a bonsai move for a win. He's got the team around him, and Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski have been quick and have been quick throughout speed weeks, and you know, Keselowski a great plate racer in his own right, and as is Logano. I think Ryan Blaney really is a contender for the win if he just stays out of trouble all day and then come lap 190 when the race is on. I wouldn't bet against him at all.
How do you make how do you feel about these Hendrick guys? I mean, we've got them starting 1, 2, 3, Gordon Johnson Jr. And then the other man in the outfit that, you know, kind of gets lost in the fray, Casey Kane, he's starting 13th. I mean, what do you make of this Hendrick group? And You know, do you see Kane just as well as a contender as you do the other three?
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like last year. I think that Casey was the fourth best guy at Hendrick Motorsports. But you know, I mean, being the fourth best guy at Hendrick Motorsports is certainly better than being the best guy at a smaller team like Richard Petty Motorsports. But yeah, I mean, those Hendrick cars. You know, once Jimmy and Junior were out in front in the duel, nobody could pass them, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, Jeff Gordon, that's the other storyline, Jeff Gordon's final Daytona 500. I think he's hungrier than ever to win the Daytona 500. I mean, I don't see Rick Hendrick putting any team orders in play to try and push, you know, push came to shove, push the 24 to the win. I don't really see that happening. But I think that but to answer your question on Kane, you know, with the restrictor plate racing being the lottery and slot machine game that it is, you know, I wouldn't rule out Casey Kane at all, just because he hasn't been on par as much with Jeff, Jimmy, and Junior.
Yesterday, the Xfinity race, we saw Roush break 0 for 75 streak. You know, you think about the long list of drivers that have raced for Jack Roush, and it was kind of stunning to me looking back at how Mark Martin was so dominant for all those years. When I saw that stat, I was actually astounded. And then to see Ryan Reed be the first guy to win for Jack Roush at Daytona in the Xfinity Series, I mean, number one, where the hell did Ryan Reed come from? And, I mean, plate racing is fun because, you know, you get these dark horses. And, I mean, hell, Reed Sorensen can win today. Sam Hornish Jr., who hadn't been a consistent Cup guy for a couple of years and honestly hasn't been a threat in Cup since he came from the start from IndyCar. You know, Mike Wallace, Landon Cassel. I mean, wouldn't that be a story? I think Landon Cassel is one of the most talented guys in the garage, but you know, he's at the short end of a lot of sticks, and I mean, he's hanging tough in that number 40. But you know, to go back on the Roush situation, Ryan Reed wins yesterday. Chris Buescher is up there. I think the world of Buescher. I'm beginning to come around on Ryan Reed. If he can continue that consistent run, a strong performance at tracks like Atlanta and Texas and the cookie cutters, then I feel really, really comfortable with him. But do we see anybody from Roush as somebody that's, you know, going to be in the mix? I mean, do we see Biffle up there? Do you think Danica's boyfriend, I'm sorry, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., is going to be up there?
I think from Roush, I think Trevor Bayne is probably one of the best plate racers out there. You know, I mean, outside of the Daytona 500 win, he's been in contention to win plate races right and left. I wouldn't bet against Trevor. Biffle has become a good plate racer over the years, but Stenhouse, I'm a little concerned about. I mean, he's caught the big one a couple of times. I mean, I wouldn't make the comparison. I wouldn't 100% comparison to someone like Sebastian Saavedra, who's got the tendency for the cataclysmic brain fade. But he's kind of seen the last few plate races. You know, the Firecracker 400 last year, you know, being one of them. You know, he's kind of got the, he's kind of getting that tendency to just I don't know if he, I don't know if it's a brain fade or what, but just, you know, tendency to cause a big one kind of has me concerned about Stenhouse. What do you think?
Yeah, I, you know, look, some guys, in my opinion, are decent Cup guys. I say that nicely. Other guys are lifers in the Nationwide / Xfinity Series. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you can go in there and I mean, we saw Mike Skinner for a long time not cut it in Cup, but when he stepped in the trucks, I mean, that guy was unbeatable as all hell. So, and you know, in my opinion, I think yes, the Sprint Cup Series is considered the top series. Yes, it pays a whale of a lot of money to its drivers. I look at it though. These are essentially three different disciplines of race car. And I love watching the trucks race. And to me, there's not a whole lot more entertainment for your buck when it comes to trucks. And, you know, they put on a hell of a show at Daytona every year. They put on a hell of a show everywhere. I mean, Martinsville is the funnest thing to watch trucks. But, you know, to touch on what you said with Trevor Bain, I actually I don't disagree with you at all, but I do want to let our fans know and our listeners know who's going to be starting at the back of this thing, because there's been a lot of changes within the last 24 hours, and the driver lineup is a little skewed. So, first and foremost, Matt Crafton in the 18. He's going to the rear. We got Danica Patrick. She's also going to the rear. Her left rear got tapped the other day by Denny Hamlin, no pun intended. Ryan Newman, he's also going to go back to the rear, as well as Regan Smith replacing Kurt Busch, as we talked about earlier. David Ragan, Kyle Larson, Austin Dillon, Johnny Sauter, Trevor Bain, Sam Hornish Jr., A.J. Allmendinger. Bobby Labonte was already at the rear. So, I mean, he starts from the rear anyway. But he'll start from the rear's rear after everything cycles out. But quite a few cars starting in the back, which not really a big deal at Daytona. I mean, given the pack racing, I tell you a couple of guys that I'm really eager to see, and because you know I'm a sucker for a underdog story, and I'm going to throw you a few names here that I really like. You know, Casey Mears has shown promise at Daytona. That guy always finds a way to just end up among the top five, top eight at the end of the race. And you know, if you can continue to put yourself in position, something may just fall in your lap. A.J. Allmendinger. Love A.J. Kid's awesome. And, you know, I understand that he was in kind of – he made the mistake the other day in the dual race. But, you know, he's one of those kids that doesn't make a lot of mistakes the same mistake twice. Sorry, getting tongue-tied there. Not necessarily for a winning standpoint, but I do like Matt Crafton to run solid, because – a lot of people may think, well, he's not in the Sprint Cup Series. He doesn't have the it factor. I'm going to tell you right now, he's a straight wheel man, and you can put him in anything, and he will find a way to drive that thing as hard as he can, the way it needs to be done, and he'll get you a solid finish every time. But, you know, Kyle Larson's another name. Could get his first Cup win here today. You know, everybody's talking big things about him his rookie season. I kind of wonder if he's going to be a sophomore star or have a sophomore slump. So, and Danica, one thing I wanted to touch on, and Josh, you know, I think that you and I, we followed this Kurt Busch story a little bit, and, you know, Kurt Busch is not the most unselfish driver in the garage area. I mean, he is, for all intents and purposes, one of the guys that's me. You know, if things aren't the way he likes them, he's going to get pissed off. It's not in his wheelhouse. He's not having it. But the other night, when Danica got spun, whether it's by airflow or by actual contact by Denny Hamlin, in the duel, she had two laps left to make it into the Daytona 500. She started dead last in the duel, restarted dead last in the duel, and it was Kurt Busch that picked her up and pushed her into the show. If Kurt doesn't do that, Danica doesn't get in. And ironically, you know, aside from all the baggage and all the stuff outside the track that I don't even want to get into, I think it's very interesting that you have a character such as Kurt Busch, who ultimately, if Danica doesn't make it into the Daytona 500, her Sprint Cup career may be over, because this is a contract year for her. And Daytona pays the big bucks, and the sponsors want Daytona. Kurt could be remembered for all this other stuff, but to me, he might be remembered for the unselfish act that he did on Thursday night by pushing Danica into the show. And I, you know, if she goes on to win this race or to finish in the top five, that right there could have been a not just a season saver, but maybe even a career saver, you know, in my book.
Yeah, well, I mean, once again, you know, back on, you know, nature of plate racing. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I mean, at that point, you know, I mean, had Kurt not bit below the yellow line trying to make a pass for third, you know, I think the situation would have been totally different. I mean, I don't think they would have told. I don't think they would have told any of the other Stewart Haas cars that they were all in front of Danica. I don't think Tony would have gotten on the radio and said, "Hey, back up, push Danica in the field. We need her in the field." But yeah, I mean it is interesting to talk about Kurt's attitude and what have you.
Who do you like in this race? Throw me either the guy that you think is going to win this thing, or throw me like maybe two or three that you're really looking out for.
I'm thinking the man starts second. I think Jimmy Johnson. He's been quick throughout. You know, he got taken out in the sprint on the limited, but you know, in the duel when his car was up front, you know, he was. Nobody could get past him. I mean, he just, you know, he's become a better plate racer over the years. I mean, initially in his beginning part of his career, you know, he actually kind of struggled a lot on the plate track. But I think Jimmy's in good position to get his third Daytona 500 win. And some other guys. I mean, Junior's always a threat to win this thing. Jeff Gordon starting on the pole. You know, even though the pole sitter in the last few years has statistically not performed well in the 500. I mean, just Austin Dillon last year led a few laps beginning, but he was pretty much not entirely invisible the rest of the race. But you know, he just wasn't a threat to win it. But for underdogs, I mean, I think one person that we talked about on in Gravel Travel last week as an underdog is Martin Truex Jr. I mean. He's been, I mean, in the Sprint Limited and in the Budweiser Duel, you know, he was, you know, that black 78 car was up towards the front the whole night, and I think it would be a good feel good story for Martin, given his personal circumstances with the last couple of years of getting the short end of the stick of the whole Michael Waltrip situation and then his girlfriend Sherry being diagnosed with ovarian cancer, which her progress has been getting better, but still going through cancer is incredibly tough for anybody. But you know, I think Truex winning. I think of all the underdogs, quote unquote, I see Truex as the safest bet.
I think, there's something to Truex this year. You know, this Speed Weeks, I should say. Just, he's running more aggressive. And you know, there may be some guys that are kind of hiding how good their cars are. I don't think Truex is necessarily hiding it. And he's got one of the top three strongest cars that I've seen thus far behind Kenseth and Johnson. Junior strong. He says this is the strongest car he's had since 2004. That should scare a lot of folks because that 2004 car was a rocket ship. But there's something to how Truex is doing. He's playing the draft better. He's blocking better. He's got good chemistry with the spotter. And, you know, and I was saying it early in the show, I'm not going to waver from my pick now. I'm going to stick with Martin Truex Jr. as my pick for the 500. I think it'll be a hell of a story. I think he's finally got whatever was on his shoulders off. And, you know, they're going after it this year, and I think he's going to have a great season. Will he make the chase? Maybe. I think he'll be on the line, that's for sure. But, I mean, this is a good chance as any to get that win to ensure that he's got the opportunity to be in there. You know, another couple of guys that I'd be looking at, and everybody's looking at the Gordons and Johnsons and Juniors. But you know, there's actually two or three other guys that I really like. Ryan Blaney being one of them that we touched on. But how about Tony Stewart? I mean, this guy's won at everywhere you can imagine, except the Daytona 500. He's won during speed weeks. He's gone nuts. But, you know, can he finally do it? Can he finally get the opportunity to win that 500 today? I mean, we'll see. He went winless last year. I mean, obviously, everybody knows the last two seasons have not been the best for Tony with the leg injury and then obviously the tragic circumstances up in New York last year. And, you know, the other end of it is the guy that I'm looking out for is a guy that's always kind of running solid but getting roughed up, Brad Keselowski. I know Frank Santoroski, you know, drafting the circuits is a big Keselowski guy. He harasses me all the time about Keselowski. But, you know, legitimately, there's an opportunity there. And I tell you what, Speed Weeks always goes one of two ways. One card lights it up and dominates the entire show all through Speed Weeks, finishes first and second and everything, ends up winning the 500. Or they absolutely have the biggest crapshoot of a weekend and, you know, they wreck out, they don't finish well, and then all of a sudden the 500, they're there at the end and they win it. And you don't look at them because of how terrible everything was, but, I mean, let's face it, Brad Keselowski is just as big of a threat as anybody else in this field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up there with Keselowski and the Gibbs Toyotas. I mean, you know, without Kyle Busch, but I mean, Carl Edwards has really hit the ground running with Gibbs, and Kansas has become one of the best plate racers of the last few years. So I mean, I think Kansas is strong as all hell, and Denny Hamlin's been strong as all hell too, and I mean, but Tony seems to be getting his mojo back. I mean, you know, I mean, like I said a couple weeks ago, he was much more. He seemed a lot more like the old Tony at Media Day. I mean, I know he said, you know, he'll probably never be the same again after what happened in upstate New York, but he ran up front in the Unlimited until he got crashed, and then he ran up front in the Budweiser duels. And you know, I think Tony might be saving his best for the end of Speed Weeks here.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Getting ready to jump off here very shortly. They're getting ready for the command to fire engine, so this is pretty exciting. We get a chance to take you all the way up to that. You know, what's a good race for Matt Crafton today? What's a good race for Regan Smith today?
I would say that's a good question there. I mean, I think a good race for them is if they would perform as well as their teammates can. Like if Crafton could snack on to the Gibbs draft train, or or Regan Smith could at least run with his teammates. And I think a top 20 would be a good day for both of them, but it's like when you start thinking about a top 20, you start thinking about a top 10. And then you're in the top 10, you start thinking about a top 5, and then you start thinking about a win. So, you know, we'll see how it all plays out.
I think more of the pressure is definitely on Regan. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crafton probably feels more pressure because, I mean, let's be honest, no practice time, no nothing, and you're stepping into one of the best cars step into, and you know, this is for drivers that have been trying to break into the Cup Series. I mean, he doesn't just get a Cup ride; he gets good equipment. I mean, he's not in a, with all due respect to Jermaine Racing and Tommy Baldwin Racing, that's not Joe Gibbs. So, you know, I think for Crafton, he probably feels a little bit more of the pressure because, I mean, he wants to perform well. I mean, him and Busch are close friends and whatnot. And, I mean, not only does he want to perform well for himself, but for that team, for Busch, and try to give it the ride that he would give it. But, I think Regan can legitimately finish in the top 10 today. I think that if he can get last with the right guy, he's always the type of guy that can stay out of trouble. He performs well at restrictor plate races, like you said. I think a top 15 finish is good, but I think at the end of it, you've really got to figure out when is the big one going to happen. You got to stay out of the big one. And I think in order to do that, I've never been a fan of laying back and trying to dodge the big one because you take the risk of losing the lead draft. I think you've got to get up there among the top five and battle for it. I mean, we've seen the wreck happen from fourth on back like yesterday. We've seen the wreck happen from the leaders, but we've also seen it most commonly happen at the end of the top 10, top half of the back half of the top 15. So, you know, trouble spots, I'd say traditionally coming out of turn four has been a trouble spot in the past. But lately I'm noticing a lot of issues exiting the tri-oval, that little short shoot area, like where the accident happened with Kyle Busch yesterday. For some reason, there's just more issues coming out through that tri-oval. And usually I've gotten accustomed to seeing in years past, it's coming to the tri-oval. So, you know, the weather's a lot different than it was Thursday night. Thursday night it was 28, 30 degrees, ridiculously cold, lots of grip in the track, lots of, you know, cold. The cold brings out the best horsepower in these engines. And now I think today we're looking at 75 to 80 degrees. Track's going to be a lot slicker, a lot less grip in it. And, you know, you're going to have just a little bit less on the performance side because it's not as cold. But, a slick track. If these cars were set up, I think at the end of the day, it's not a fast car. It's a good handling car, and you just got to stay out of trouble because either way, I mean, it's pack racing.
Yeah, I think you know, I'm gonna agree with you on the trouble spot. The entire tri-oval is the trouble spot, and the track gets narrow there, and you know, especially towards the end when everyone's trying to push and shove each other to the green or to the checkered flag. You know, I think that's a trouble spot. But I think the first few laps, I'm gonna kind of quote Larry McReynolds here, that you know, it's just with the track conditions being different today as they were the rest of the speed weeks, with the temperatures, I think everyone just needs to feel out their cars and then just get to that first pit stop and make adjustments accordingly. I mean, it's racing. You race the conditions.
Well, Josh, it's been a lot of fun, huh?
Yeah. It's been great to take you right up to almost the green flag. Phillip just sang the national anthem, so we're ready to get the NASCAR season started, and let's see how it goes, my friend.
Before we take off, I want to do one thing. And we do it every show, but unfortunately this list got a little bit bigger given this weekend. First and foremost, Forza Jules, thoughts and prayers always with you. Jules Bianchi, you know, Ferrari's F1 hopeful, for there for a long time from Marussia, injured last year. My thoughts are with you. Our thoughts are with you, as well as Fernando Alonso, who was airlifted today technically in Europe, but yesterday to me because I was asleep. You know, Barcelona testing, word is he's okay, but our thoughts are still with him. And, lastly, Kyle Busch, laying up in the hospital, thoughts are with him as well. Wish him well. Hopefully it's not a 6-month deal. Hopefully he comes back in under 90 days like, DW did. But, yeah, whoever you're picking for the race, folks, you know, we're pulling for you to have a happy, race, not an unpleasant one, because it's the biggest race of the year, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and we appreciate you listening. Have a good one.
Right. Take care.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time, the green light flashes, the flags go up, churning and burning, they yearn for the cup, they deftly maneuver and muscle for rank, fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down.